ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Bright Brains Podcast. Today, my guest is Mark, or also known as Evil Mark, of the Evil Mark Show.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Isaac. Thank you for letting me be on your show today. I really appreciate it. I've got a chance to listen to your show before I got a chance to be here today. I'm really excited to join you guys today. My name is Evil Mark. I'm the guy behind the Ask Evil Mark on TikTok and Instagram, and of course, the Evil Mark Show, a podcast that's a bit of a mess. We talk sports, but not in the way that you're used to. It's a mix of wild opinions, intentional provocations, just plain ridiculousness. Not about politics at all, just sports talk. But I've been in the broadcasting and podcasting game for about 10 years. Before that, I was making people laugh, doing stand-up in Arizona and New Mexico. And my show, somehow it's made it into the Apple Top 100 in sports. But here's the thing. It's not your typical sports talk show. It's sports talk, but for people who hate sports talk. And today is kind of interesting because we always kind of, on my show, we always veer off into this. We always talk about the past and kind of my connection to my prior podcasting stuff. And we never really get to dive into it. So I've been promoting this on my own show because now I get a space to kind of talk. This is kind of hard to talk about when you have to break down the NBA finals and we have March Madness. It's hard to be like, well, let's talk about conspiracy. Like we do work it in naturally when it comes up, but I've never really got to dive into the whole topic. So that's what I'm here to talk about is years ago, I think I moved over from the broadcasting to the podcasting world about, I'd say probably about 2014, maybe 2 years after like everything was really kind of blowing up. It just started out as a way to try to like support my comedy. And I gotten, I think like, what the story I want to tell you is basically, the story of the 2016 election, but also it's a story of, my own kind of dipping my toes into, what would later become the alt-right. But at the time was just a bunch of people having a lot of silly fun. And we can see in, as we go through this story, we're going to see it starts off pretty edgelordy and fun online, people enjoying jokes. And then we see, we can all see now what it's eventually turned into. So, and I know this is always a hot button issue when it comes to politics, because we're always like, okay, well, who are you with? What do you represent? Because you want to know what you're being sold. By who? So I'll just start off by saying, currently, I consider myself a libertarian. I don't have the ability to vote in this upcoming election. So I don't really have a horse in this race. So I nowadays, I definitely look at it objectively. But just from my past, I was somebody who was half Hispanic, half white, mixed race person, grew up with Catholicism, pictures of John F. Kennedy, would have considered myself a really, really liberal person. And now I find myself being somewhere more libertarian. So I know as we have our discussion, we find more there's also this symbiosis of political growth that happens throughout my time, not only at the start of the 2016 election, but all the way to now where I just do sports talk and I don't really talk about politics other than pick at both sides when I get a chance.
All right, Dan. Well, let's hop into it, man. So let's get to it, man. Where do you want to begin? The 2016 election?
Yeah, well, let's go back. I think the turning point for I think a lot of people is a lot of people think that we can track all of this craziness back to when Donald Trump comes down the escalator. Because before that, we had two terms of Obama. You know, Obama can't run for a third term. We know there's going to be a big change, but we know there's a lot of the country is disaffected. So we look on the other side, we see Hillary Clinton, who's already been rejected before the first time, and kind of in a kind of a gross way. I think that kind of turned off a lot of Democrats, but we know Hillary Clinton's coming back around. She's always wanted to be president. Here she is. And it's almost hers to lose. And then we have Bernie Sanders coming onto the scene for the first time. So if you look on the Democratic side, you have Bernie Sanders, you have Hillary Clinton. On the Republican side, before Trump comes down the escalator, it's Jeb Bush is going to get it. It's Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. These are unknown quantities. These are just guys who are just kind of out there and didn't know if anything was going to happen with them. So you're the political spectrum at that point before Trump comes down the escalator is that it'll probably be Hillary. Bernie will probably make a lot of noise, maybe push a lot of that political opinions more to the left. Because Obama, and I was a guy who supported and caucused for Obama both times, was perfect at telling you what you wanted to hear, but it always laid down the middle. You could, depending on how you like him, he was definitely a guy who was, your mileage may vary. If you're a guy who wanted progressive change, he brought enough of it forward that you could be like, yep, it's a win. And the guy always had to put up with a lot of shit. So you give him credit for that. If you were really hardcore left wing, or you're really in that Bernie Sanders camp, then you would look at that and be like, this guy sold us out. He promised us this. He made concessions to them. He was always making concessions that first 4 years. And then the second 4 years, he was just trying to survive of them not liking him because he was black. Like, that's the history of Obama. So you can kind of choose how much you really like him, depending on where you fall on the left scale. But I, when Trump comes down the escalator, at first it's a joke. I would say probably the first 30 days it's a joke. I was on 4chan, a 4chan and Redditor back in that time. Still am a Redditor, not so much a 4chaner anymore. But there was this idea that he was so bombastic and so crazy in what he was saying. There were a couple of different communities that kind of sprung up around the time. And these come into great prominence later, because these are the whole entire scandal and the whole entire first 4 years of the Trump presidency kind of revolves around this. And the internet censorship that we see today kind of revolves around this. So there's two basically group of Trump's fans at the beginning. There's people who think it's really funny because he's such a buffoon. And then there's people who really think like, yeah, we should have a businessman. So we don't know about all the weird stuff yet. We just know that, like, he says he's rich, he's a businessman. So there's people who like him for that. And they're like, yeah, the business should be run by the country. This is a very small minority of conservatives. Real conservatives won Jeb Bush. But then there's these other people, there's these 4chan people who are like, he is so nuts with the weird shit he's saying. He's saying, you know, there's some bad hombres. The first couple of clips that start coming out, the first kind of rallies that come out where he's challenging people, he's yelling, he's doing a wrestler kind of reaction to the audience when he's first coming onto the scene, and people are digging it. So online, it germinates with these two different communities that come out on Reddit. There's the underscore Donald, which became the biggest one, which was about serious people who liked his policy, who thought he had a possible chance in on the Republican side. And then there was another community called Mr. Trump, which is more about just like looking at the craziness of it and kind of finding satire in it. And this is where these first two communities start to form. It doesn't really pick up a lot of steam until on the Democratic side, we see Hillary starting to run away with it. And then we start to see Bernie Sanders, who's having all this like groundswell of support online, especially on Reddit, not so much 4chan, but Reddit especially. You see all this kind of stuff working for Bernie Sanders. Now at this time, I'm just like on the outside looking in. I'm up for grabs, I would say. Previously supported Obama both times, even the second time. And I'm like, I'm up for grabs. I know I will not vote for Hillary Clinton. Just the first time around, and how black people, Mexican people were treated, how everybody was treated, was always in that whole section of Democrats. It was always like, it was back then, it was Hillary's turn and Obama upset the apple cart. And that's what they want. The Democrats always had this idea, especially in that time before Obama, was yes, Mexicans and blacks deserve a seat at the table, but not this seat. This seat is for our guy. Like, one day you'll have this seat, but not right. Like, you got to wait. You got to wait your turn to ever get sniffed this seat. And you know what? You're probably not prepared to have this seat anyway. So there's always this like down talking to those really progressive members in the Democratic Party. And Obama flipped the script on all of that. And we're thinking here with Bernie Sanders that the same thing's going to happen, that Bernie Sanders is going to be able to do the same thing that Obama did to Hillary Clinton. He's got all this groundswell of support. But then we keep seeing even Trump people who are kind of getting into the election, are kind of seeing all the dirty tricks that are being played on Bernie Sanders along the way, and how all these things that are kind of that Democrats find important are kind of being pushed aside for more neoliberal ideas. So now we have Democratic meetings and conventions and caucuses across the country where they're trying to figure out what the new platform is going to be post Obama. But what we're seeing is we're seeing Hillary Clinton cozy up to big business. We're seeing her more cozying up to weapons manufacturers. And these are all things that Obama did partially, but he always kind of talked his way out of it, or at least kind of gave you a rationale for it. She's doing it blatantly. It upsets Bernie Sanders people. It upsets people on the right. But the more and more as time progresses, we see this attrition from Bernie Sanders people, especially after the Nevada caucus, which was basically a really crooked event where basically Bernie Sanders people are invited, Hillary Clinton people are invited to caucus. And then at one point there was a call for dinner. So because they had been standing in there for X number of hours, Bernie Sanders people went to go get food. The Hillary Clinton people knew that they were going to call back the caucus at the time. So this is something that can be easily seen. That's just not a conspiracy. This happens a lot in caucusing, though. It's dirty. It's political fuckery, but it happens all the time. The real problem there was you could put part of the blame on the Bernie Sanders people was a lot of these people were young people, didn't know how these games are played. Democratic Party is really built on the term they use is who puts the tables up at meetings. So what that kind of means is, and this happens with like a lot of church and community events, is like the people who were there at the beginning or the people who have a history of being there are always going to have a little bit more. They're going to have a little bit more juice than everybody else. So if you're a new person, you're always going to you like, even if you're a new person with a brilliant idea, you probably have to wait. You're going to have to kind of earn your stripes before that new idea becomes in place. The more and more dirty tricks we see, the more we see people flocking over to both sides of that, the Mr. Trump side, the actually like, hey, maybe we'll take this guy seriously, but more to the other side of we're having fun. So when you look at all the other subreddits, the Hillary Clinton subreddit, you look at the Bernie Sanders one. Bernie Sanders one is all about like raising money. The Hillary Clinton one's all about talking about how there should be a female president. The Donald's all about how like, oh, he's going to run this company. He's going to run this country like a business. Mr. Trump was all about jokes and memes before it really caught fire. And it's feeding from 4chan. And that's when I got involved. I was watching all of this just as kind of a person who was into politics, and I was kind of floored by the idea of the Trump supporters who did not actually like Trump, but they liked the community that was kind of being built around it. And there was this kind of wild, wild west of ideas. With Mr. Trump, there's these different sections of people. There's a Weebos for Trump, so people who like, I don't know what that is. Yeah, anime pornography, but who are Trump supporters, and they're making stuff that's and then there's like there was all these accusations that, you know, that he's a Nazi, and then they were like, what originally caught my thing was, and I think she's totally wiped it off the internet, but there would be people would take pictures of Taylor Swift, and then they would put Nazi regalia on her, and then they put weird quotes by like Hitler, but they would attribute it to Taylor Swift. Like, we have to defend the white race. Like, just knowing it wasn't like this is because this is believed, it because it's so ridiculous. So, in this era right here, there's all this ridiculousness going on with Mr. Trump, and then this is when I'm like, I want to kind of know more about the people who support Trump because it seems like it's wildly different right now. So this is before everything really blows up. I start this podcast called MAGAPOD, MAGAPOD, and I start reaching out to different Trump supporters. And in a Marc Maron kind of interview style, I'm like, I'm gonna this first part of the show, I'm gonna talk about like what's in the news, and then in the second part of the show, I'm gonna interview one person who's a Trump supporter, who's someone who's on that side, who might consider coming over, and why would they consider coming over? What do they like about him? This podcast found a lot of more success than I've ever found with any other project as far as comedy or broadcasting. And it wasn't a true support podcast. It was just the idea of like, I'm going to explore all the topics and see who's there. On that podcast, I interviewed, at first it started off with just regular supporters. Eventually I was able to interview bigger names, a lot of guys who went to prison for Trump, the Air Force general. There was Roger Stone I interviewed. Then there were other celebrities like Anthony Cumia. I interviewed Tila Tequila about this. And there was this. So now there's this whole kind of upswell of Trump's related to. And this is going to sound as crazy as I know it's going to sound. But at that very moment, before he wins the Republican national bid, and Bernie's still in the race, and Bernie's going neck and neck, and we haven't gotten to the total of him quitting yet. It's almost like punk rock. Like all the fun that's being had is being had at Mr. Trump, and I'm doing this podcast to discover, talk to these people to find out what it is they like about him and what they find so interesting. And this all turns here when, and this is where the conspiracy gets introduced, is when WikiLeaks breaks the DNC server emails. So the biggest issue that everyone had on the right was, and even Bernie Sanders people had, was the emails, the hidden emails that Hillary Clinton had, and also the paid speeches. So we knew that she raised money. Bernie Sanders raised money from people by asking for money, go around begging like a Salvation guy with a bell and a bucket. And that was his thing. And fair enough. That's what you have to do when you don't have corporate interests. Trump did the same thing. He basically begged for money from his people. Hillary made her money by going and giving speeches to people at Goldman Sachs, investment bankers. And the problem there would have been like, well, she says she's for these more progressive causes, but she's getting paid by other rich people, really rich and influential people, and we can't know what she said. We can't know how much she was paid. This all starts to cause a schism in the Democratic Party, and that's what leads to WikiLeaks. And this is where it dra this is where history and conspiracy and people's own opinions kind of takes off. Before we decided to talk, I suggested a book to you called It Came From Something Awful, which kind of goes into the history of 4chan, but it also goes into like where we are now, and it talks about WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is the point where it WikiLeaks, this is, I think, the things that everyone can agree on. WikiLeaks did happen. It was leaked by somebody. Who leaked it? You can have a wild answer. You can go from murder to a Russian planted agent to the reality, which was just a guy in Sweden who was a 4chaner and a shitlord who was enjoying the meaning that was going on. This is where it splits. This is where this conspiracy splits. But we know that the DNC leak happens. There's really, really embarrassing stuff that comes out of WikiLeaks, and that's what causes the Trump side to finally coalesce. The death of the Bernie Sanders, once we know that he's not going to win, the Trump side starts to form around the information found in WikiLeaks, and then this whole entire campaign gets more momentum than I think anyone ever thought possible. No one, people all the way up until the end. Nowadays we go, well, he won the election in 2016, but during that whole time, it wasn't. It was such an outlandish idea to even think, oh, he'll be president. It's like thinking like, the Arizona Cardinals are going to win the Super Bowl. It's a giant leap to think like, yeah, everything will work out and it'll come to the way it is. So yeah, that's kind of where everything kind of comes together, is at the beginning of WikiLeaks.
Going back to that time, so this, you said everybody kind of looked at him as like being a joke. I knew as soon as he came on the scene and he started saying things like, about the illegals coming over, committing crimes, things like that. He started saying like quiet parts out loud. And I knew that once he came on the scene and started saying that, I knew that he was going to be president. I know you're probably thinking, man, you didn't think that. You say that now. But no, back then I remember talking to people and saying to them, like, hey, Trump is going to win. And everybody like would laugh at me or say, oh, you're crazy. And my thought process on this is I feel like 2016 was kind of a rejection of the establishment. So I'm a young guy, I'm like 33 years old. Everybody I knew around my age group, they supported Bernie Sanders. In fact, I think if Bernie was the candidate, he would have beat Trump.
Oh yeah.
And then the thing is too, is that Jeb Bush, in my opinion, but George Bush was the worst president we've had. I'm not sure what you think about that, but I think the Bush name is tainted. And I just did not see him winning. I know at one point that everybody thought he was going to win because he had a $1 billion campaign fund. Think about that. I think that at the time, that was the most of any candidate anybody had. But I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, there's no way they're going to let another Bush in. And the other Republican candidates, they're not really getting any kind of momentum. They're not getting any kind of, presence in the media. It was just Trump and then Bernie and Hillary. And nobody was enthusiastic about Hillary. And then with the whole thing with the emails came out, I mean, that it was a wrap for Hillary right then. So let's talk, what exactly got leaked from these emails? What was it?
Now, see, that's such an important question, because because typically when people talk about WikiLeaks, they're always like, well, there were WikiLeaks, and and then that was part of collusion. Like instantly, we jump right to the either like the Russians were involved and they planted it, or just depending on which flavor of and which side you're on, kind of determines that. But the best question, the most important question, is what's in the leaks? Because we can all agree the leak happened, and there was damning evidence that came out that was used by the right, by the Trump people. And what we found out was a lot of really negative stuff and a lot of rat fucking is the proper term in the Democratic Party. It was that the DNC chair never really liked Bernie Sanders. They went out of their ways to shortchange him. There was all these dirty tricks. They talked about how I think the thing that I found most offensive was the idea of that, like, okay, well, we need to micro target. So what we need to do is we need to have more events with Hispanic or Hispanic last named people, surnamed people, to have events. And they're like, let's have a taco party and let's have this. And this is all kind of stuff that you would see like at a company that was trying to figure itself out. So, I mean, there's fairness, like, are they secretly evil racist? People on the right will tell you that. I think I think there's no one more kind of awkward about race than liberal white people. And it's partly because, and this is where I'm going to be really biased, in my mind, as someone who's a libertarian, but as a former Democrat, but as someone who's Hispanic, I think that what happens here is that they want to have that inclusion, and that's a good thing, but it's kind of done on their terms. So it's kind of like, yeah, you'll be included, Mexican person, but you can't bring all that Catholicism with you, even though that's part of the culture. And we also want you to, like, hey, when you're speaking Spanish, like, could you not, call this masculine, call this, can everything just be kind of like, they have their own ideas of what they want. And that's my biggest concern as a libertarian. It's someone who's worked my whole life, and I've never looked at a candidate been like, yes, it's because I want free stuff. And I know there are right wing people who think that, but I always of the opinion, like, who's going to level the playing field? What I don't want freebies. I don't want advantages. What I want is I want a level playing field so I can prove that I'm better than the white guy this or the black guy who's going for this job. To me, it was always about the meritocracy, and the Democratic Party and liberals have a hard time of, like, they'll bring you in and they want you to be there, but they don't want you to be too loud. They don't want, they kind of want you to kind of know your role. And they kind of want, they want you to be there to be seen, but maybe not heard so much. And we're seeing that. We even see that now in the current Democratic Party, because there's this is how I kind of described it on MAGAPOD. This is always my thought on the race part of, even back in 2016, it was like, I always felt like Democrats wanted to own you. Like, they know you have your vote because you can't go anywhere else. You're going to go vote for the fascist, the guy who's going to send everybody off to war. Like, nowadays they're all ready to send everybody off to war, but so you can't, you're not going to vote for the fascist. So you have to vote for the Democrat. And if you're going to vote for the Democrat, it was almost like they took your vote for granted in my mind. And yeah, they didn't, they wanted to either play white savior or they wanted to be. So they're the ones who get, not only get to inflict the trauma throughout history, but now they get to be the ones who are like, I'm defending you. I'm the hero. So you get to play both sides of the fence. Like, it's awesome for them because you get to cause all the damage that you want to start. And then you get to come down later and be like, yes, I'm the hero. I'm going to save you. And I'm doing everything right for you. It never really sat right with me. And I think the Trump thing was, and I think a lot of this, it never would have got the critical mass if it wasn't for the Bernie people. I think a lot of people don't understand that. Oh, the real dyed-in-the-wool Bernie Sanders people saw all the stuff that happened, and these were young people like yourself who were coming to, for the first time, and they didn't realize how crooked and screwed up the entire system is. Not just DNC, but nominating somebody, getting them through the primaries. They didn't see how the sausage was made. And then when they saw how it was made, especially males on the who they would call Bernie Bros, because once things started to fall apart, it was like Bernie Bro went from a fun term to describe young males who supported Bernie Sanders to turn into young misogynists who won't get on board with the Hillary Clinton campaign. And there were a lot of people who were ashamed to be like, yeah, okay, well, female president, yeah, I got to do my part. Like there was the simps, but then there were a lot of people who were like, no, I'm not obligated to her. And that's where we see all these Bernie Bros coming over. And it's almost like the gateway drug here, because when the Bernie Bros are coming over, now the Trump thing is gaining critical mass. But they're coming over not to the Donald, they're coming over to Mr. Trump, because what they see over in this political subreddit and what they see the talk on 4chan is it's all memes, it's all fun. It's all these are all things that kind of appeal to a younger male demographic. And it's all like it's reinforcing like masculine stereotypes. It's the whole thing like you can be fair, it's okay to be white. These are all things that kind of get turned later. They get really, really turned later because the big elephant in the room here, not just Republican Party elephant in the room, but the other elephant in the room on the other side, on the Donald, and the criticism is fair. You do have white nationalists over there. You do have like Project Europa, and you have these guys who are like, we have to protect the white race, and we know what they mean. Like they're talking, like they're like, well, you know, the white race is going to be extinct. Like anytime you got people where you basically have real racists in there, but who are not saying it. They're like they're you have that firmly in the Donald. So now, when things start to come together after Bernie Sanders is officially done, we have a merging of two subreddits, and now this is the kind of most important thing. WikiLeaks has just come out. Both subreddits are running with all the negative material they're hearing on WikiLeaks. Things start to fall under one umbrella. And I think it's Roger Stone who I interviewed, and he said it on my show, which was perfectly, I think, perfectly encapsulated what was going on at the time. Roger Stone said, and I quote, and he said this on my show, this is the hostile takeover of the Republican Party, when he referred to what was going on with Trump and him being going to win the nomination, as he was in there insulting people and just basically running amok in the RNC primaries. But we the two subreddits, so the internet community is spread between two different subreddits. We agree to come together. So now at this point, I've been hosting this show. I'm friends with kind of both subreddits because they're bringing me listeners. In my mind, I'm thinking like, my whole point was like, I didn't care what your reason was for Trump. We were at a point, some of us were at a point where like, yeah, let's keep having fun. Let's stop Hillary. And like, he's not going to cause this much damage because he's kind of a buffoon. Like this all works. And it's a nice protest vote. Like you can vote because you don't like the way they did Bernie. You can vote because you don't like her cozying up to weapons manufacturers. Like whatever your choice is, even if you're a real, real liberal, you can find there at this point in time, you can find some room under the Trump banner. So we formed together. And this merger is where Mr. Trump gives up his name and a user base. And they merge into the Donald. And now it was interesting at this time because the conservative movement is all hell is broken loose. Glenn Beck is supposed to be a leading voice, but he's anti-Trump. So he's rejected by this new version. This is where the term alt-right comes in, because the conservatives on r/conservative had no patience for Donald people or Mr. Trump people. They thought it was all stupid. And they didn't like the fact that we were taking over the front page. And they were the ones also pushing for the algorithm change that took all the pro-Trump stuff off the front page of Reddit. But once the merger happens, there's a weird moment here where we're grouped together. So I'm there with the people who put together the subreddit at the merger. It became like, okay, these are the guys we're going to work with. My show is there. Charlie Ben Shapiro was just getting started there. Ben Shapiro was like a young and up and comer. There was gosh, oh, I can't remember that guy's name. The one who's got a, like a desk out and he's like, debate me, like trans women aren't women, and he's sitting at a table. He was
I know
also,
you're talking about Walsh.
Matt Walsh. So
There
he's
you go.
there. And then there's like Portnoy was a little bit more political back then. So you kind of had all these kind of, and then there was also Alex Jones, who Alex Jones was just a straight up conspiracies, but now he starts to kind of fold into the Trump thing. So we have
And
all
Stephen Crowder, was that the one you're?
Crowder. That's the one
Yeah,
I'm
there you
thinking of.
go.
Yeah. So when this whole thing forms, when the alt-right comes together and they're like, okay, who are the people we're going to listen to? Who, you know, who are the people we like? Because they didn't like Fox News. This is Fox News hadn't been taken over yet. So they liked him. They liked Crowder. I was there, Ben Shapiro, and we were the ones. And they didn't like Glenn Beck. They didn't like Sean Hannity. They didn't like Tucker Carlson. Those guys hadn't proven their loyalty yet. So as this whole movement's kicking off, they were like, okay, these are going to be the guys we're going to push. And in my mind, it was like, I thought the alt-right, I was like, this is great because this is going to be a new conservative movement and it's going to be based on the meritocracy. That was my thought. Like, I was like, that was what would be great. Like, I thought would resonate with other Hispanic people would be like, hey, like no one's going to give you anything. Let's all agree on that. But we're going to make the even playing field so that you can do better. So if you're willing to work for it, you can get it because it's going to be based on effort. And that's how I kind of thought saw the alt-right. And I also saw the alt-right as a way to, we're going to be able to take out all the religion stuff. Like if you're religious, cool, but that's not going to be what drives our decision. Our decision is going to be based on jobs, people being able to make money, like all the good stuff about being anti-immigrant. If you're in a border state like me, I live in Arizona. Or if you're from New Mexico or Texas or California, like especially the closer you live to the border, like the more you realize it's a problem. And the more you realize it's like a super, super dangerous problem. And not just like an anecdotal, like, hey, one white woman got killed. Like that's like what's funny, what gets attention is never the terrible stuff. Like they never talk about the gang rape of like a child, because it's a shame, because when you get into that, because if it, when you hear like, oh, well, there was a migrant rape, there was a really terrible migrant rape, like you're almost, in order to get people to pay attention to this problem, you're like, geez, I hope it's a white child, because that will get on the news. Because if it's a Mexican child, if it's a black child, if it's an Asian child, ain't no one gonna give a crap about it. No one's gonna give a good goddamn, and it's gonna get swept under the rug. And that's the problem with migrant crime. I think a lot of that was built on the border. I think a lot of those people could see it. It's obvious that that's a problem. It's obvious that that problem has been exacerbated right now. No one can give a good reason for why we're flooded. You know, it's just a
Yeah, it's interesting, this whole immigration thing. I'm not sure what to make of it either, but it's interesting. I just saw a video a couple of days ago. This gay black man had got beat up by some illegal immigrants, and it didn't really get much, steam, because it does seem like, anything dealing with illegal immigrants, it's not really covered. But I want to kind of deviate a little bit. Why do you think there's so much illegal immigration right now and there's nothing being done about it?
Yeah, it's when I look down there, and I the last time we went down to a border station was maybe like 6 8 months ago. It's pretty stark, and it's not so many Hispanics. There are other people who that are coming up. That's it's kind of odd. Before, I would say even back in the Trump day, even in the era of what would they call themselves? The Minutemen, or these weirdos who were out there in the desert trying to like protect the border, these kind of volunteers. Typically, what it used to be was just like Mexicans coming over looking for a better life, trying to make some money, trying to send a family member over. These people are not interested in being Americans, but we never gave anybody a chance to be. Both sides had this unwritten agreement, like, yes, this is cheap labor, we kind of need them. We'll let them come over. We'll let them, you know, it's turning a blind eye to crime. But now it's been, the blind eye has been turned so bad. And now you look at these other countries, Mexico, Guatemala, Panama, Peru, where COVID has ravaged them. Their finances have ravaged them. And their only choice is to flood in wherever they're available. And that's what we see. And the problem here is that, and I think this is why I think this is why when they bus migrants, it's so shocking to white people in New York and Chicago and where how they're busing them up from Texas is this is something that the Mexican community, the Mexican American community, has known for a long time. When migrants come in, it's not like they're going to be moving to Scottsdale or they're going to be moving to Thousand Oaks. Like they're moving to Black and Hispanic communities. And I can tell you, as far as the Hispanic community, I can speak pretty thoroughly on that. Like, there's no one who dislikes migrants, especially migrants who are coming here just to make money. And the cultural style versus Mexican Americans versus Mexicans than Hispanic people. They know it because they've had to live with them. And they've had to live with the crime, and they've had to live with the cultural differences. And I can't speak to any other minority community. I know for the Mexican American community, there's a big push to own that Americanness, to get a job, to work. Those things are valued. And to practice your faith, to raise your family right, not to be white, but to find those things of value in the Hispanic community. And when we look at the migrants who come here, that try to get involved in that community, they just don't share those same values. These are people who are suffering real extreme poverty, coming into a place that looks privileged to them, and not realizing that the sacrifice it took to become poor in America is a lot of hard work. And that's where we butt up. We butt up into this in prisons as well. This is something that it's funny how the entire prison culture and the way race relations is on the inside has kind of found its way into the larger American culture as it is. But there's huge differences there in values and what's important and how you live your life, even between Mexicans and Mexicans and American Mexicans. Our term is mojado. So mojado is means I means it's literally means wet. So it's like wet back. Like that's our term for it. So that's what we talk about when we talk about a person who showed up there and who is veering the community off track, or is acting trashy, or just doesn't know how even poor American life is supposed to be carried out. Cleaning your stuff, being respectful. This is just not how it's done in Central America. Central America, when you talk about the type of poverty they have, it's just that's why favelas look like there's trash all over the place. That's why, but even really bad Mexican communities are pretty clean, and you don't want you know that. If we leave this all broken up, we know someone's going to get into a house and burn it down. Or we know that this is going to get turned into a trap. Like it's poor, but it's poor with this is I don't know if white people will get this, or I don't know if this will resonate with everybody, but it's poor with dignity. And that's what used to be available. That doesn't exist anymore, or that's fastly going away.
Yeah, I think that the Democratic community or Democratic Party, they don't really understand that. I think that, if you raise any kind of concern about this, then you get called racist or white supremacist or anything like that. Earlier you mentioned about how you feel taken for granted by the Democratic Party. I definitely feel that way as well. As a black person, I feel like they do take black people for granted. And I think that a lot of black people don't really feel that they have anybody else to vote for. They kind of just vote Democrat and hope for the best. And if you, at any time you voice any kind of opinion about the Democrats doing something that you don't like, it's immediately, oh, you're a Republican, or oh, you're a Trump supporter. It's like, no, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm just saying, why are they doing things differently? This isn't working. Sending all these migrants into poor black communities and raising the crime rate, it's not good. Why is this happening? Maybe we should do something at the border. But if you voice that, they cut you off. And one thing you mentioned about you said about how, like, when you speak Spanish, they don't want you to use the masculine or the feminine. One thing I've noticed is that, and maybe you could speak to this, Hispanic people hate the term Latinx. And I hate that term too. I hate it as well. But it's like, they keep forcing people to use that term, and like they don't like it. Just use Latino. Or Latina.
But I look at this whole thing, and I think I think of like now we're talking about the rise of woke, and we're talking about the kind of who became the more important group. Because I think with Democrats, it was always like what the white ally, civil rights, like these things didn't come naturally to the Democrat. These are things that got slowly integrated into the Democratic Party. Democratic Party was a party of slavery. I mean, this, but not to say that they want to keep it that way, but they were, this is a party that slowly got forced to go left. And this is a party that was, that JFK was the outlier. He wasn't the prime example. The LBJ is more of the Democrats. Someone's like, yeah, we want civil rights because it's good. Not because it's like the JFK idea was more rooted in the idea because equality, giving people equal access. Later Democrats, it's like, well, yeah, we want to do those things because those are fair, but then we also have these other ideas. But when you look at woke and you look at LGBT and you look at them changing the language, that's what's funny about it. Like the Democratic Party knows they have a lot of people in the bag, so there's no need to appeal to them anymore. So I think, and I think this is, and this is what kind of, if you were a union worker and you were a Democrat for your life, and then you realize like, well, they don't like us, they don't like me anymore, they're more worried about other people, these are their special projects. I think in my mind, and maybe you can speak this, like when I think of Black people who are still in the Democratic Party, yeah, I think like they probably don't have a lot of choice, because what are they going to do? They're going to go vote for Trump? Like you can't do that. Like, so they're kind of stuck with this, and they have no one really favoring them anymore. And in fact, it's become so ridiculous that, so you have white people who've basically changed their gender, because that's what the bulk of them are. So you have white people who've changed their gender, and now they're the most important people. Somehow the party of civil rights, or the party that was mostly for civil rights, has found their celeb cause in life, and it's themselves. It's them finally. And it's there is nothing more privileged in our entire American society than a white woman, right?
Yeah.
When we look at a Taylor Swift, I would say, would argue, is the alpha white woman, right? Can never be blamed for anything. We all love her because her music's great. She looks good in her bodysuits. She puts on a great show. She's a great performer, but she's dated a known racist before, never took any criticism. The one time something went wrong in her life where Kanye West came out and ruined her big moment is such a life traumatic event. It requires an album. And when the rest of us have to drink through paper straws while she uses her private plane to go to, she is the alpha white woman, because it's what every white woman wants to be. She gets to be a defender of social justice and truth, and no one gets to criticize her. And if anyone does criticize her, then you're persona non grata. We've literally gone from defending civil rights to protecting the civil rights of white people who are defending those rights. So, but the people who actually need those rights, we got you. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And I think that's what, and the big thing here, I think, with this, and I think that the Bernie Sanders supporters are kind of disillusioned. And we see this even in major media, because who are the people who really like Bernie Sanders? Because he was putting together quite like a connection there. I mean, you even had people, the really middle of the road people like Joe Rogan, who was a Bernie Sanders supporter. There was a big tent there for Bernie Sanders supporters, because a lot of people believed in those policies, because instead of identity, it was more about what are the policies that are going to put people on the same kind of path, income equality, taxing the right people, climate change, getting people to free college, student loan forgiveness. These were all things that like you and me and a white guy would all agree on, because yes, we've all suffered the same thing. That I think Bernie Sanders was the first time where, and I think Blacks and Mexicans know this, because when you're poor, you're poor. Like there ain't nothing special about you, and you realize like you're not better than most, because you're here, you're there, you're having to deal with the same day-to-day struggles everyone else. And I think now, especially in this time post-COVID, I think a lot of white people find themselves in that same kind of area. This is why I've always liked if you told me, would you like to meet a really, really liberal white person, or would you rather meet like a southern, like a Theo Von type Louisiana, Alabama white guy, and who might be a little bit wrong, you know?
Racist, or
Yeah,
yeah, wrong, yeah.
I'd always say I take that guy any day of the week, because with that kind of white person, once they realize, because it's not about hate for the most part there, it's about ignorance. They just don't know it. They've never met someone. And you always go through this with these type of whites, when you eventually go through the trials of friendship, or they realize they're kind of in the same boat, or we kind of see those same things. Those kind of whites are always like, they either go two ways. They get it, and then they're on board and they like it. And then, they're like, yeah, like, I hang out with these dudes. Like, there's that, or they default to that. You know what? You're one of the good ones. I like you. Which that confirms that, yeah, they're still racist, but at least they can be won over. But a liberal white, you can never win over, because they know more than you, because they're there to take that from you. Not only did their parents stole everything else, they're here to steal the sympathy and the understanding, because
Exactly.
they can't help themselves from stealing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's man, I feel like the left, they kind of push a lot of people to the alt-right, especially like if you're a young white man, you're still trying to make it in the world, you don't have the money or connections, and then they come in, they say, oh, you're privileged, and you're like, hold on, I'm working, at Walmart, I'm working two jobs trying to make ends meet, but then they say I'm the bad guy, and that kind of pushes them away. I don't want to get too off topic, but they put out this graph recently where they showed that women were going more liberal and men were going more conservative. I don't know if you saw that. It was kind of a couple of weeks ago, it caused a big uproar. But and people are like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? It's like, well, you're pushing men away, and it's going to be a problem pretty soon, because a lot of young men think that Democratic Party or liberals or left-wing people don't care about them. And
I mean, the you're 100% right. And I would even take it a step further. When you look at young men, the problem here is like, geez, when you have a lot of young men, and I think this is something the Black and the Hispanic community have known before, but I think this is what white people are finding out for the first time, especially when now that there are so many single homes, and with the divorce rate, I think what a lot of young men who grew up without a father, in the Black and Mexican community, there's always an uncle, there's always like a cool guy who kind of walking. Hopefully, you're in the right community that will
Yeah,
land that spot
hopefully.
for you. Hopefully, I mean, I was blessed that way, but with the white community, they're experienced this for the first time, and now you have internet, and you have all this stuff to search for resources. And the problem is like, if you're a white person, if you're a white male who's kind of being picked on by society, or kind of being told you have privilege when you don't, and you have this, you have advantages and you don't, and in your mind you're like, nah, I can't get laid, I can't get anything, like, where's my privilege? When you start looking for that kind of male figure, the problem is that you're going to bump into the maybe you'll bump into the Ben Shapiro's of the world, just kind of like academia kind of guy, but still weirder stuff there. But then you could find Jordan Peterson, and you can find, I'm trying to forget the guy who was like
Andrew Tate.
Andrew. Yeah, you and this is the problem with Trump, I think, is what people don't understand, is that when they extinguish Bernie Sanders and you give a bunch of disaffected people no choice, they start turning to things that they don't really understand. So they get involved with the Andrew Tates of the world. You hope they get involved with like something light, like a Joe Rogan, and all they want to do is like cold plunges and workout. Like, you're hoping that it's that, but it could be Jordan Peterson, and getting even more weird. It can get into incel, then you get into real incels, or you could get into TRP, and all these things are there in this vacuum because young men don't have anything to turn to. And we see where white people are is where a lot of Mexican and Black communities are rushing to because we don't have that uncle. We don't have those. Those things are slowly going away. So even they're looking to the internet and they're turning to these things that they don't understand. We're the Democrats are always worried about fascism. And Trump is not a fascist. Anyone who tells you like Trump's a fascist, it's just he's a narcissist. If there was a section of people, like if his shoes would have worked out, and let's say there were sneakerheads, there were a groundswell of Black people who were like, we like him. Instantly, he'd be willing to listen to the conversation. This is a guy who was moved by Kim Kardashian coming to the White House to talk to him about one particular person. This is just somebody who likes to have his ego stroke. He is a lot more simpler than everyone else. A lot of other politicians seem to have they have their own agenda. They know what they want to push off on you. He's willing to accept. If you're willing to stroke his ego, then he's willing to kind of go along with you. If he thinks that you like him, then he'll find something he likes in you. That's not a fascist. A fascist would be like, this is how things are going to go and you're going to deal with it. But if we continue down the path the way society is going, people are going to feel so disaffected at some point. Like if we have another 4 years of Joe Biden, the next time, the next guy beyond Trump, that's going to be a real fascist. That's going to be a guy who's going to reach out to people and be like, you know what? People have forgotten about you for 8 years. No one's given a damn. We're going to get that Andrew Tate, Jordan Peterson, but in the form of a politician who's slick, who does it right. Because Trump has got so many foibles. But one guy's going to have it together. He's going to look clean. And we're going to get a real fascist one day, a real fascist. And this all boils down to, in my opinion, as a former Democrat, after Hillary lost, after 2016, they went right into this mode of we have to stop Trump. Everything he does for this 4 years, we have to create every kind of situation to give this guy a hard time, which part of it is fair. They did that to Obama, so the other side's going to do that to him. But they went so overboard with it, just make up stories and this and that. What would have been interesting there in 2016 after the Hillary loss, and I really thought this was going to happen with the Democratic Party. I thought there would be a moment of self-realization where they took a step back and said, well, why did we lose this election? Who are the people who didn't vote for us? Where's that gap between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton? That where should this be party be going? Because all the young people like Bernie. So this is kind of where the platform should be. I kind of thought there would be a breakdown there and where they'd go, okay, these are the things we need to work on. This is how this party needs to change moving forward. But that was totally ignored. They literally just said, okay, well, the Hillary playbook didn't work. We're going to run it again. They ran it again with Joe Biden. But this time now we're going to add wokeness, or we're going to add this. And they never really stop and took a step back and realized, like, we've lost a huge section of people here. There was never any kind of we lost because what did we do wrong? It was always because we lost. First, they said it was in election interference. That seems to be forgotten. Then they said it was WikiLeaks because of the conspiracy. They were like Russiagate. That's why we lost. There was never a point where the Democratic Party really took a self look at itself and what it wanted to be, and all those good things about Bernie Sanders should have echoed in the next choice or in policy, and all those things that Bernie Sanders was bringing up are totally forgotten at this point, which is a damn shame.
So let's take it back. You mentioned about Russiagate, and you're saying that the CIA has been putting misinformation onto the internet. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so with WikiLeaks, one of the funny things that came out of WikiLeaks is so we find the emails, we find the discussions, we know that the emails clearly show that Hillary has a private server, which is something I think a lot of them do, but she's got a private server. She's reaching out to her FBI contacts, to contacts she has within the NSA. And the huge thing here is WikiLeaks is so anti-military. WikiLeaks originally springs up because of it's muckraking for actions that were done in the Middle East, the killing of civilians. WikiLeaks is more about just exposing corruption wherever it's available. Now no one knows who really leaked it. There's a couple different. This is where it kind of turns into conspiracy. Is Hillary Clinton reaches out to the NSA. NSA reaches out to the media companies, and we learned this from the Twitter files that they that the media the CIA and the NSA, the National Security Agency, more reaches out to news outlets that this has actually been planted by. There might have been some Russian interference in that hacking section. The really crazy right-wing conspiracists believe there was a DNC staffer called Seth Rich, who was a disaffected DNC person, who was also a Bernie bro, if you wanted to label him, who was murdered randomly in Washington, D.C., no leads, very suspicious kind of murder. They were saying that he was kind of the one that might have leaked that information. I know for a fact, or at least this is what I know, is that this guy got turned into a they said that he was a team of Russians, but it was one gentleman named Guccifer, Guccifer 3.0. There was also Guccifer 2.0, but it was the same guy. With when these subreddits come together, there's a lot of people, Scandinavian people, who are into this, and they're into it for the memes. They're there for Moon Man, and they're there for the yucks and the lulls, and they're not necessarily interested in this politically because they're in a different country, but they just like to stir the pot. And so Guccifer starts releasing additional emails. This one person starts releasing additional emails, more information.
Now, hold on. How did Guccifer, how did he get these emails? Did he hack?
Yeah. So from what I understand, and this is because there was always a question. Yeah. How did Guccifer actually access these servers? And it was that WikiLeaks had found the servers and was trying to search up information on Hillary Clinton. They were anti-Hillary Clinton. I think Snowden's been pretty clear about that. And a lot of this was because the NSA people never wanted him to get a pardon. The NSA people threatened Trump at the very end of his presidency that if he would have got a pardon, they would have went back and they would have completed the impeachment. There's a reason why Snowden still is in Russia and can't get a fair shake. Him taking a run at the military industrial system and the intelligence community in this country made him persona non grata to everybody except the Russians. That's why he's there. Yeah. But he had access to it, and his team had access to it. And Guccifer was part of a peer-to-peer network of other network admins and developers. I don't like the word hackers, but that's basically, for the layman, part of a group of a collective of online activists, or you could say hacktivists, who were into muckraking, who were into kind of exposing this, let the chips fall where they may, not because they were left or right wing, just because let's cause as much chaos as possible. There's a streak of anarchy in there, but there's also a streak of anti-Americanism in there with WikiLeaks and these guys. They looked at the Trump presidency or the candidacy, and they just saw a lot of fun to be had. They saw a lot of nonsense, and they saw like a lot of entertainment value in it, and they wanted to stir the pot. And everyone on the Trump side was willing to love to have the pots stirred, because they didn't like things like the deep state or the NSA. They were very, for all the negative things about Trump supporters, and there are a lot, there's a lot of criticism for some of them. A lot of them are kind of single-minded, but like, they're definitely an anti-war group. They're definitely not for more military invention, maybe for all the wrong reasons, because they don't want to be the world's cop, or they don't want to spend the money, or they don't want to help other people in other countries. Like, they're like, hey, screw everybody in Yemen. Like, they're anti-war probably for all the wrong reasons, but they are anti-war. And I think that's where WikiLeaks saw, and Guccifer also saw, a line of thinking there, because when you have nationalism, the first levels of nationalism are kind of like cleaning up your own country and, you know, obviously making your military strong as part of it, but not getting involved in other people's conflicts and kind of being really, really selfish with your resources. Why would we help NATO? Why would we help them? Why would we, like, I think about where we are now with Ukraine and the Palestinians, and if that germ of nationalism still kind of runs in the Trump campaign. You don't see it so much now because they're kind of playing both sides of the fence, but for a lot of these Trump supporters, like, they don't care. Like, you could tell them, they're like, oh, there's, which is might be a good thing or a bad thing. It's definitely a little cold to be like, yeah, there's Palestinians blowing up, but being blown up every day, and there's hostages, and they would be like, well, screw both of them. There's problems in this country. There's a callousness there. But I think there's a callousness there born out of the idea of, like, when you look around and things aren't right here, it's really hard to summon the level of caring for Ukrainians. And it's really, if you tell me that, you know, we started a coup, now Russia's involved in a war with Ukraine. So if you're telling me, like, Mark, I got to take some of your, or Isaac, I got to take some of your paycheck because there's oppressed white people in Eastern Europe, and everything that happens over there,
you know, it's important. That's why I need your money to go defend those other people. It just doesn't resonate with people. There's the feeling bad for the terrible stuff that's happening, but like at some point you can't constantly feel bad for everybody else and not look around yourself and realize like you're in a whole heap of trouble. Like who's they talk about this and see this in church. You can't have a woman who's dirt poor giving all her money to a preacher. At some point you have to they have to own some ownership of like, hey, you got to fix some stuff around here.
I totally get it. Basically, what it feels like is happening is, for whatever reason people have for supporting Donald Trump, they are valid reasons. You know, people don't feel that the establishment is meeting their needs. But what the Democratic Party is doing is that they're saying all of that sentiment you see online is fake. It's just all Russian bots. You know, and so what that does is that the media is running this playbook saying it's Russian bots and don't listen to any of these people, and that they're saying that Donald Trump's presidency is illegitimate. And at the time, I'm not gonna lie, I bought into all this. I was thinking that, oh man, did the Russians plant Donald Trump? And I'm looking at the whole Mueller report thing. I'm listening to the news every day. It's like, oh man. The way the news was painting a picture that any day Robert Mueller was just going to come out and, you know, they were going to get Trump to step down and everything was going to be right in the world. But it looks like the whole Mueller thing kind of fizzled out. What's your take on that?
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but are you looking to reach a dynamic and engaged audience of curious minds? Well, look no further. Bright Brains Podcast is the perfect platform to showcase your business or product. You'll be able to reach a diverse, intelligent audience and engage with listeners passionate about personal development, technology, and more. Elevate your brand through thought-provoking discussions. Don't miss this opportunity to promote your business on one of the fastest-growing podcasts in the market. Contact us today to discuss advertising options and elevate your brand to the next level. Contact us at brightbrainspod@gmail.com to secure your advertising spot on Bright Brains today. Again, that's brightbrainspod@gmail.com. Now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, the Mueller thing was kind of funny because like as after 2016, so after the Trump win, they're doing everything to kind of stop the guy. And then the Russian gate starts coming up. When they first started reporting on WikiLeaks, it wasn't like, look at the terrible emails that came out. That's why I was so intrigued by your question of like, well, what was in them? Because when the news broke on WikiLeaks originally, it was like, oh my gosh, someone hacked the DNC and someone's giving that information to Donald Trump so he can win the election. No one ever asked in the mainstream media was like, okay, well, what did they find in WikiLeaks? And in fact, they went out of their way to be like, well, we can't really talk about what they found because it's illegal information. Like they went out of their way to not talk about what, like if I told you I found secret documents and this proves aliens, but I'm not going to tell you what, like, and your first question wasn't like, well, what do you got? Like what's in the documents? That should be the question, not like, oh no, those are illegally obtained documents. I don't want to know about the aliens. They obviously can't exist because you stole that information. Like there's a cognitive dissonance there. But with Russiagate, just watching it from the sidelines. Now, after 2016, I was pretty much done. I had especially with my podcast, I had other issues in life and I couldn't continue the podcast. And although I liked some of those people, I didn't like where some of it was going. I could kind of see the writing on the wall with some of these supporters, like the alt-right kind of got turned into the new right. And then even then the alt-right kind of got the name kind of got bungled up. And it went from the shit posters and the fun people online, the Mr. Trump people slowly and slowly got weeded out of their own movement. And I was always a voice in that movement who was more of a jester than the other guys who took it more seriously. I always liked it because of the fun that was being had. I liked that it was a political movement, but it was also kind of thumbing your nose at society and norms and
the memes were there, and it was the Pepe, and it was all that kind of fun auxiliary stuff. And then as the presidency happens, I'm like, okay, this will be good in my mind. And this is what I've always said. Like, it was always, to me, it was always like a great practical joke that happened. Like, it was the greatest practical joke in the world. Like, got this guy over. It pissed everyone off. Everyone's upset by it. He's going to go there. He won't get anything really done. And then 4 years from now, we'll have like, the adults will be back, but it will have scared the establishment enough. They'll know to like, not fuck with people. Like, it's almost like the Bud Light, protest. Like, I don't think anyone really wants like those guys to lose their job, or like distributors, or like, but it's just it's just a good feeling to let a giant corporation know, like, hey, don't fuck with us. Like, just know that someone's going to hold you accountable for the weird shit you do. And you can't sell to a certain group of people and then betray them and then think like, oh, it's all right. Like, sometimes society, corporations just need a good slap to be like, knock it off. But as Russiagate happened, it was funny because they're talking about Guccifer. They're talking about he's a team of Russian hackers. And it's as someone on the sideline who was witness to all this stuff. And then the Alex Jones stuff. I mean, we would be on a Discord. The Donald had a Discord, and we had a VIP section. I got a chance to talk to pretty much all these guys. And like, some of them were like true, real racists, like Anthony Cumia, like real, real bigots. And then some of them were just like shit talkers, or they were just guys who were having fun. And Guccifer was one of those guys. It was just, he was there just to stir the pot and cause trouble. And then to see the news, to see CNN, and they're like, oh, a hacker team known as Guccifer. And I'm like, I know Guccifer. This is a guy who was like, you know, he live streamed with us on Slack one time so he could do Molly. And during a meeting with Alex Jones, like, this is just, and so to hear all these guys were like, oh, they're this, they're that. It was just like, I know. I was like, I just know it's not true. Like, I was like, I know this is personally not true. And then you're watching them lie, but then you're watching Fox News lie. And then this Mueller report's going to come out and it's going to change everything. And then it comes out, it's a whole lot of nothing. It's a lot of speculation. And that's a sad thing. I think with the people who are anti-Trump, if you're listening to this, or just in general, if you have an idea like, no, I would never vote for Trump. Understandable. There's a lot of distasteful things about him. His treatment of women, general attitude about, there's a whole mound of great criticism to go at Trump. But the fact that they invent things so many times when they don't have to, if instead of debating him or bringing better ideas, the idea has just been to bury him under scandal. So Russiagate turns out to be nothing. The impeachment never actually goes through. These are all kind of symbolic things. Even up to this day, we still see the fight down in Florida, which is basically brought by a crooked. That's probably the most misguided one, because these are people, or in Georgia, where they literally, they didn't have to do this. They brought this on themselves, and now they hired the wrong person to do it because it's all blowing up in your face.
Are you talking about the Fannie Willis?
Yeah, thing? Fannie.
That whole thing is weird. Like, I don't know what she was thinking. My thinking is, if I know I'm going after the president, I want to make sure that my background is like totally clean.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, like, did she not think that they would find that? You know, I have no clue, man.
If you got to think, yeah, if you're going to be like, I'm going to take that guy down. I'm because I think it's unjust what he did. I think he's an insurrectionist. Like, I'm going to be the one who brings him down. Yeah, you damn sure better make sure your house is in order. And if you know, look, there are people like, I don't think I could work in politics. This is why I was never a lawyer or a cop. Like, I know I would have been dirty. Like, I would have been the guy. I would have been the guy who'd been like, well, I want to bring this case against this guy, but maybe I'm not the right person to do it because I don't want to get my own ass caught in the crosshairs too. So, but there's that. There's the New York judgment, which is basically like, he overvalued his real estate. Every time you look at one of his scandals and you really dig into it, the sad part is it's always so manufactured. And that's why, if anything, all they do is help him. The greatest supporter of Donald Trump are crazy liberals who get so worked up by him. The CNN, MSNBC, the media outlets. These are the people who love Donald Trump. I mean, they love Donald Trump more than somebody who buys the $400 shoes and wears the red hat. They love Donald Trump on such a visceral level because they're willing to give him attention at any moment. They're willing to make up any kind of lie to try to trip him up. When all you'd have to do, if they would have just backed away from this guy and said in this last election, in 2020, if they just would have been, hey, this is all about the record. This guy has failed here. He's failed there. He's failed this. Do we want to still have these same kind of failures? If you would have made the policy argument against Trump or made the personality argument against Trump, I think those are stronger arguments. The fact that they always go back to these scandals that are based in nothing, and it only invigorates his people. Now his people really think that he's being picked on, because everything, when you really start digging into it, you're like, oh, it's questionable. Like the insurrection thing is another one. It was like, did he cause it? Questionable. Were people let in through the gates? Yeah, it's all kind of like a real insurrection is like, go to any Latin American country when there's a coup, go to anywhere where there's a real coup, like that's an insurrection. So we're playing fast and loose with this language to try to demonize him, when he don't have to demonize him. You could beat him on policy. He doesn't have he's not a great thinker.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it feels like they're rolling out a red carpet for this guy to go right back to the White House. That insurrection thing was very odd, because I remember when the whole thing went down, watching it on TV, and I remember seeing clips of the police officers like joking around and letting people in and laughing at things like that. And the images that I'm seeing don't match up with, you know, the reality. I think that these people, they were, you know, I'm not saying what they did was right, but they're just goofballs who got caught up in the moment, you know, people who are like easily led astray. I'm not saying that they shouldn't face repercussions, but this idea that I think they just wanted to go in there, goof off and take some pictures. I don't think that they were really in there trying to kill anybody or anything like that. And what's interesting is that they said like four police officers that were involved in that day committed suicide. And that's what I'm like, what's going on there? You know,
you have this politicization of the intelligence community. This is the real concern here, is when you looked at Russiagate and all the things that came out of it, because that was like the first big scandal that didn't have any steam. What you had there was Trump made enemies with the DNC. He made enemies with other rich people. There are billionaires who don't necessarily like him. They like some of the ideas. Even the people on his side, like, don't really generally like him, because he won't kiss ass like everyone else does. But what the problem with Trump, I think his biggest mistake was the moment he took on some people want to call it the deep state, but I would basically call it the American intelligence community. The moment he started questioning them, he talked about being anti-war, and he started going, this is where we affect American business. When you start saying like things like, well, maybe we do, everyone needs to have a ceasefire. Maybe we need to stop this. Maybe we need to stop this war. I think about, what are things that Democrats and Republicans can agree on? Those are the things that should scare us. So when we have Republicans and Democrats who are going, yes, we got to fund this war. This war is in Russia, in Ukraine. We've got to do this. We got to keep doing this. We got to keep up this fight. We got to keep giving the money. You go like, do we though? Like, you guys are both committed to that. You both get money from weapons manufacturers like Lockheed Martin and other. Like, you seem to have a vested interest in war happening. And you seem like you wouldn't have to be involved in a war if it actually happened. Like, you seem like you're incentivized for war. And Trump took on the National Security Agency. And I think this is the result. These scandals, and I think for a larger part, I think there's, and this is where the true, I mean, break out your tinfoil hat here. But when I look at their involvement, not only into the January 6th, the insurrection, we see multiple FBI officers there. We see CIA operatives who are collecting information on various people. We even see FBI involvement in the opposite side of movements. We see FBI involvement with BLM, different communist groups across the country. So why would our national intelligence agencies be involved in both sides of this equation? Like, this is why Republicans would tell you, see, they're Democrats. They're trying to push a Democratic. If anything, I think that they're pushing just a culture of never being able to find common ground. January 6th and BLM, especially, like, a lot have a lot of similarities there, because who delivered all those bricks? Why were the first ones to start throwing bricks through windows? Allies. Why were they the first ones to suggest people arm themselves? And then we look on the other side, January 6th. Why were the ones screaming, like, we have to go in there? We have to go in there. They were confirmed feds. We have an intelligence community. I don't think people understand, like, the intelligence community in this country is wielding more influence than politicians ever will. This isn't about Trump and Biden. This is about those who have stronger ideas of what this country should be doing, or are doing whatever they can to cause disarray and cause misinformation, and use all the tools at their disposal to try to cause trouble and try to push the narratives that they want.
Yeah, I had a realization a while back that any kind of movement, whether it's conservative or liberal, they can't allow, the establishment can't allow these movements to be peaceful. Because if they are peaceful, they win. And what I mean by that is, if you look at the civil rights movement, that was like the first time that the American people really beat the establishment. And it was because it was peaceful and it was organized and they had a goal and they achieved that goal in the long run. And what happens is, if they can infiltrate these movements and turn them violent, then it turns the rest of the people against them, and it allows them to then use the whole police, state, military apparatus against them. For example, during the civil rights movement, when they were peacefully protesting and the people weren't doing anything, but they attacked them with hoses and dogs, people worldwide were like, whoa, what are they doing? You know, they're out of line. And that's when they won. But now let's go back in time and let's say the civil rights movement turned violent and they were throwing bricks in the storefronts, burning down buildings. Then when the police hosed them down, attacked them with dogs, the police are in the right. And so that's what happens there. This isn't even a conspiracy at this point. All these movements, right wing, left wing, they're all infiltrated and they are all pushed into a violence, so that way they're justified to take them down. There's a great podcast about this called Alphabet Boys. They talk about how what they do is they get in, they have informants who they try to find people who are in the movements who aren't that bright, and they try to get them to basically, you know, do something violent, and that way it brings the movement down. And the thing is that, you know, they push all this division because they want the working class, be it white, black, Hispanic, whatever, they want us fighting each other, because if we fight each other, we don't fight the people at the top. And what happens is there's this massive gaslighting. And before the rise of the internet, they were able to get away with it better. But now with the internet, we can see in real time the gaslighting happening. Like you said, you were in these Reddit forums and you were talking to these people and seeing what they were about. And then the media paints it a different way. So I kind of have an experience with that. Recently, there still is a movement called ADOS. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all, ADOS. It's a movement of Black people who are fighting for reparations. Now, whatever your opinion on that, it doesn't really matter, but these are genuine. It's a genuine movement of people who are organizing and fighting for this. But I see the media refer to them as Russian bots. And I'm like, no, these aren't Russian bots. These are genuine people. Like, I follow them on Twitter. I watch their YouTube channels. They're genuine people, but they say they're Russian bots. And what that does is any kind of criticism lobbied at the state, the government, they just say, oh, you're a Russian bot. And then that means people can dismiss it when it really is genuine. And what's going to happen is when they keep doing that and keep doing that, eventually, like you said, there's going to be a real fascist or somebody that comes along and really gets these people and connects with these people. And then the media and the government's going to be like, whoa, how'd this happen? You know, you can't ignore people for too long, you know, but that's exactly what's happening. You know, they're trying to manufacture this narrative that doesn't fit. And, you know, so my question is, how do we go about combating this? Is it even possible?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you would hope for the better angels of men. However, like what we see here is we're talking about basically the police state. We're talking about people who look beyond left and right. Like they're thinking of control and how to disarm this. And I think there's so many similarities there. There's so much of what Bernie Sanders talked about in 2016 that kind of gets lost there. And there's all this huge swath of middle ground that I think a lot of people could find usefulness. I would hope that that's the real problem there, that you would hope that someone like an RFK Jr. or someone maybe a little bit more on the progressive side, maybe another Obama, but like someone who's actually progressive would kind of be able to kind of build a groundswell or a movement that would be kind of be able to kind of capture people's imaginations, that would bring these topics back up, which I think is the real losing point here. Because if we had a real Democratic candidate who was talking about all those things that Bernie Sanders was talking about in this election versus Trump, would be drastically different. If we had someone where's the candidate talking about student loan forgiveness? Where's the candidate talking about police reform? Everything has got to be, you know, police reform makes more sense than defund the police. Although I'm a libertarian.
I agree.
For me personally, I'm like, defund the police, but yeah, let's defund the city hall. I'm a libertarian. Like, let's defund all of them. let's not stop with the cops. But there's a lot of middle ground there that I think people could see that just no one is going for. And you wonder if anyone is ever going to go for it again, because the Democratic Party just seems to be so far out of the reach of people. I'll tell you this, when during that 2016 election, like now by that point, once we get to the convention, like I'm already in, I'm already doing my podcast. I have all these friends that are there. I think of this more as a great practical joke, and here it is, you know, working its way to completion, and we're having fun over there and having a blast. But me, as someone who grew up a Democrat, and who, I mean, we had a picture of Jesus Christ in our home and we had a picture of John F. Kennedy. Like these are the saints of where I grew up in our kitchen. That's where those pictures hung. So to see at the Democratic National Convention, and even though I'm totally out at that point, but to see the Democratic National Convention bringing a CIA guy in the convention floor to kind of talk about security, and when protesters are chanting "No more war, no more war," and they're being booed and hissed, and it makes me think, like, and you mentioned Bush before as possibly the worst president. I agree. We basically passed the Patriot Act. We basically turned into a police state at that point, where we've given these people too much power. And I'm like, here we are. I'm with George W. Bush. It never really bothered me, because I'm like, we always got our side. We always got the side that's going to be progressive. We always got people who are going to fight for anti-war. But now we're here. We're booing and we're hissing at anti-war protesters at the Democratic National Convention. Like, I get this. If this was at the Republican Convention and there were a bunch of people like, you know, make peace, you know, make love, not war. Like, I could understand a bunch of Republicans, a bunch of stuffy white conservatives being like, get these guys the hell out of here. These guys are idiots. But it's there. These are supposed to be their people, and they're being booed and they're being marginalized. Will we marginalize the peaceniks in the party, or the people who are calling for understanding? We've radicalized it to a point where I don't know if we can get beyond it. Me personally, it's more of a pessimistic kind of opinion, but like for myself, I think of how far we're gone, and like And I just think, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your own opinion, but my opinion is like, I never had any kids. I definitely have people I love, but I never had any kids of my own. Like in my mind, I'm like, you know what? I just want to ride this thing out. And I know one day it'll get bad, but hopefully by the time it really reaches its tipping point, it'll be long after I'm gone. And in going back to the same kind of fun we had in Mr. Trump, it's like, it's almost for someone who believes that like the tipping point is going to happen and we're already lost. In my mind, it's like, just find the good moments, find the fun moments till then, until this whole thing goes to shit. And hopefully I'm not there. And hopefully if the nuclear blast does happen or the nuclear war does happen, it happens before work and not after I just got off my ship. Like, it just seems like that would be the better time, right? Like, yeah, we're going to have nuclear winter, but it can't be after a long day of work. It should be first thing in the morning. Like you gotta go to work and boom, you know, you hear all the radio alarms, you hear the national buzzer service, and like, doo, 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 doo. And it's like, it's an actual real announcement. And they're like, nuclear war is starting. You'd be like, great. This is, now I don't have to go to work. Day off, man. Day off.
Yeah.
Like, and guess what tomorrow is going to be? Tomorrow is going to be a day off as well.
Exactly, man. I get it. You know, and I wonder, like, if it's even possible to even, like, get a progressive candidate or someone who cares about the people. Is the machine so corrupt and solidified that it's just the American people don't really play a role in it anymore? Like, speaking of gaslighting, like, for example, Joe Biden, the guy is clearly senile. You know, the guy is clearly not all there, but they want to run this guy again, you know, but and they're just going to force it through. It's like they have a square peg and trying to stick it into a round hole, or maybe it's the other way around. But you know what I mean? They're trying to force this thing through, and they're just so arrogant. They think, hey, we control the media. You know, we control these news stations. We have all these. I think they actually have bots on social media that try to influence people, and they're just going to try and force it through. So my question is, what's your prediction for 2024?
I think 2024 is going to be there's a couple of things here, especially with Biden. And the most scary thing about Biden is, to your point, is we know he's obviously, to me, it's elder abuse. Like, he obviously doesn't know what's going on. So if he doesn't know what's going on, and he was the one who's elected, and he's the one who might be elected again, so he's obviously not in charge. So that means we know he's not cognitively making those decisions. So who is making those decisions? You'd hope it's the people in his cabinet and the people who were the Weekend at Bernie's, him, you know, around. Like, you, that's the hopeful thought. The dark thought would be, okay, well, the people, the real dangerous people, the people in the NSA and the national security agencies, the people who have incentives to go to war and run this country, have their hooks in them more so than the people around them. But either way, if you have to ask the question, is like, we have a president, we don't know who's really calling the shots, because it's obviously not him. So you have to either accept the reality of one, he doesn't know what's going on, but there are helpful people around. Like, he's like a grandpa who's should be living in a nursing home, but he's living with family. So that's the dreamy thought. The worst thought is that the NSA is calling all these shots through him. And that's why they love him being there. So we either wait for him to die and the next person comes in, and then they can kind of be either bought out, or you have enough dirt on that person, so they'll just do your bidding. You feel like that's going to happen on the DNC side. For me, when I look at this election, I think this is going to be, this could be a very, very easy Trump win in my mind, if he were to stick to just to the, and this is why he's such a tough nut to crack here, is because if he stuck just to policy, if Trump got in front of everybody, even people he didn't like, if he went in front of the Black and Mexican communities and said, hey, look, where were you 4 years ago? Have things drastically gotten better? How's your life right now? If he went a la Ronald Reagan, he'd win a lot of support. He people would instantly go, yeah, I look around right now compared to where I was 4 years ago, compared to pre-COVID, and I go, things are really screwed up. Even Black and Hispanic people, when I think they even get more upset. I know I get more upset when I see videos of like And I don't know where you're located, but I've been to San Francisco, San Diego, California since COVID. When I go into those communities that, like I said, used to be poor but with dignity and now have become war zones, you look around and you're just, white people go, when they get there, they go, oh, I'm shocked. I can't go to downtown San Diego more. There used to be a really great tapas place here. Now I can't go. Like, they're sad because of that. If you're Mexican, black, you're like, this is our community and this is, it's bombed out. Like, why is this like this? It's not, it's an existential crisis to a white person that can't get their favorite tapas, but to people who grew up there, who had to live there, you're like, wow, this is totally different. So if he ran on the issues, when he just ran on, like, look where you're at, look where we're at now, like, look at all the tents that are out there, look, like, no one's taking any of this seriously. Like, and even if his solution was like, we got to get everybody back to work, we need to get more jobs, like, even if it was something lame like that, that would probably be more solve at least to some of the issues, but not make systemic change. If he just ran on the idea that things will be better if you vote for me, I think it would be an easy win. The problem here is he gets so shook and he gets so consumed by his own little issues. This is why he's not a fascist. This is why he's a narcissist. Is if he could stick to the policy, he would win in a landslide. People are fed up. Even when I see all those people looting, man, that upsets me because in the area that I grew up in Oregon, really rural, but a smaller Mexican community, a lot of Mexicans and whites, poor people living together. Like, the fact that we could have like a record store, or like a GameStop, or like we could have a CVS, and it was like that CVS was, in our case in Oregon, we had a Dairy Queen. And that Dairy Queen served us not only the restaurant, but it was community center. It was, it was so many things to people. And then I look in Oakland, where you have people who want to live with dignity, or who are trying to survive, and now you can't even have a fast food restaurant. And then the worst thing is, like, no one can be honest about it. The politicians can't be honest about it. Be like, well, this is what we've done. Things have gotten so bad that we've deferred to crime and we're not going to do anything about it. And people, white people who see this, in the suburbs, just get scared. They're like, I don't want this here. But what they're really writing off there, and this is the problem with the Democrats. They're just like, oh, that's terrible, I don't like it, but they're not going to do anything about it. But the problem is, you've turned everyone else in that community into a hostage as well. So it's not just about somebody going there and not being able to get in and out and getting their car broken into. It's that you've taken everyone else who lives in that community and you've turned them into a hostage of crime. And if Trump would focus on that, I think he would win in places like, in some of these states like Michigan, Pennsylvania, where I think there are a lot of minority communities that, if you made the argument like, look, this whole thing is unsafe for everybody, but it's definitely unsafe for you because you have to live here, then I think it would resonate. I don't think there's anything the Democrats are really going to do about crime and restoring, even getting, not even restoring those communities, because quite honestly, I don't think
They
anyone
don't
is ever going to
care.
restore the, yeah, no, they don't care. But you got to at least get it to the point where it's not rampant. Because the moment it becomes rampant, there's only so much to steal in one area. It's just like there was only so much stuff to blow up in Afghanistan. You got to get to a point where that crime is going to go to the suburbs. And then that's the point when that crime gets to the suburbs, when it goes across the bay, or when it goes from LA, and it starts going into north, when it starts going into Santa Barbara, when you have that lawlessness in San Luis Obispo, that's the point when white people are going to turn to fascism, and that's when regular people are going to turn to fascism. They don't. I think what's missed here is that, like, those communities that where they've let these terrible policies come in place, it's not just about crime. It's about people being hostages in their own community.
And when those white people do turn to fascism, the media is going to be like, how did this happen?
Yeah. Oh, shocking. Why would they go with this guy? And they're gonna be looking for that's like, I was kind of worried about DeSantis would have been a really, he kind of fit all that kind of mold, because he's got the name, kind of sounds Spanish, definitely has a lot of support of his Hispanic Cubans, and but really kind of a guy who would definitely be more in line with police agendas, like hardcore police agendas, like, oh, we need to stop filming cops so we can, so they can do their job. Like there's another, a worse DeSantis, a worse Trump coming down the road. It's because both sides are not incentivized to clean the crime problem. It's unfortunate. I wish there was some hope or optimism, but to me, yeah, like I think we've reached the tipping point, just like with, I know there are a lot of conservatives who don't believe in climate change, or a lot of libertarians who don't believe in climate change. Like, I think we've already reached the tipping point. Like, I think what we're doing right now is a lot of window dressing, and but no one wants to deal with that. Like, we're fucked. Like, no one wants, that's no fun. It's kind of hopeless. This is not how humans are wired. Humans are wired to believe that, and for better or worse, that things are going to get better if we just keep working on this. We can't get to the point where it's hopeless. But me personally, as someone who's 44, who probably has got not much enough time to maybe see this, watch it, get some good yucks out of it, but also try to enjoy what I want to enjoy, maximize the privilege I've earned over a lifetime of hard work. Like for me, it's terrible, but I don't see anything changing, and I don't see a path to fixing this.
Yeah, same here. I've kind of lost optimism as well. I don't really see a way out. I think that the establishment knows that we're fucked as well because of climate change, a whole bunch of different issues. And now they're just kind of doing this perception management of the people. And that's what I mean by the gaslighting. I'm curious, is there anybody, like any candidate, like that you wish could be president? You know, like any politician that you think, like if they had a chance, like Bernie Sanders or something like that, anybody that you would love to see hop in the race and become president?
Yeah, I think one day it'll eventually happen. I think AOC is going to be an interesting one. That'll be definitely one that sets everyone on. That'll be another one of those ones down the line where it'll be really fun because she draws as many haters as she draws admirers. I think she would be really interesting. I think she's a true believer. Like Elizabeth Warren, I think is fake. Not only fake in a number of different respects, but like, I think AOC is underneath it all, and she's kind of been compromised with how she's got to kowtow to the, gosh, I try not to be too to the influence in this country. So there's
I get what you're saying. Yeah. I say the corporate state, but I get what you're saying.
You gotta like look. I don't believe in anti-Semitism, but like, look, there's something to be said there about who you can and who you cannot talk about. In this country, you can pick on minorities. You can even mouth off and mm-hmm. have really strong opinions about Asian drivers or this. But the moment you a perfect example of it is Kanye West. The moment you start talking about the wrong people is the moment things kind of turn on you. And I think if you're a politician, the moment you don't support Israel and you don't support the people who basically the Zionists who love Israel is the moment you kind of become persona non grata. So she's had to make some kind of compromises for Israel and those people, which is fine, but I do think she's a true believer. I don't think she would be like our only hope. I think there's probably another AOC after that, or people who are hopefully influenced by Bernie. I think Robert F. Kennedy would have been, if he would have been younger and this would have been a different time, if this would have been the next election cycle, I think it would have been, people might have been more open to it. It's hard to unseat a sitting president. It's just Ted Kennedy famously took a really good shot at it with Jimmy Carter in 1980, and all it did was ruffle feathers. But I think there's going to be a guy or a female on the Democratic side who's going to be able to build a consensus like Bernie did. I think it'll definitely happen. My concern is that the NSA or people or the media will turn on them and never give them a fair chance like they did with Bernie. But
yeah.
It could change. I mean, if AOC got in the right place, you have someone who's a true believer, and people are open to the ideas of democratic socialism. I mean, they always want to demonize that word, but like, being able to student loan forgiveness, people generally believe in that because we all know it's kind of a scam. As far as income inequality, we all realize that the rich are getting way too rich. Like, even if you're left or right, you can take the, everybody knows that in every community in this country, and the disparity only gets wider and wider. And there's a need for this. There's an unfilled need for this, but it's just knowing right now in this election cycle, it will never be met. So that means 4 more years of suffering until we either get Trump for another term or we get rid of Biden. When Biden's done, it would almost be a relief if Biden wins, because that means that the next Democrat is going to have to be drastically different than him. So the next Democrat's going to have to really, really embrace progressivism, because by that point, even Democrats are going to be kind of done with this middle of the road, pro-military, pro-NSA kind of approach to democracy. There might be hope that the next election cycle, but for this election cycle, it can only get worse. And we're bumped up against the idea that there might be a ground war with a major superpower. Like, I know, yeah. And I don't mean to pick it because you're obviously younger than me, but like, I always think of like, there is some empathy here, because when I grew up, there was the go-go 80s, there's poverty, there's AIDS, there's all this terrible stuff. But there's really nothing like world shattering until you get to 9/11. There's nothing like, the 90s were so awesome because it's like, you could enjoy yourself and like, yeah, there were big problems, but they were big social problems. Like, we should be nice to gays. Like, no, I don't know, I don't like that. And the other people were like, no, we should. Like, you think back how privileged and like kind of how much you were in paradise. But at the time, it seemed like all these crazy things. But this new current generation, since post 9/11, like everything seems to be like a complete nightmare. Like pushed up against, there was the never ending war. Now we're pushed up against a new wars that may go on forever. It just seems like the only people who have benefited, if you're a millennial or you're a Gen Z, if in your whole life, the only people who've really made out like bandits are like weapons manufacturers and billionaires who've accumulated more money. Like everyone else has been kind of fucked over, as opposed to the 80s and the 90s, where like if you're a Gen Xer, like you still kind of believed in the American dream, or you would, the whole thing would be, as a Generation Xer, I want the American dream, but I want to live it on my terms. So I could, and what that meant was like, I'm going to wear my funny hat and I'm going to have my own stuff. Like it was a very different set of individuality now. And now it's all threatened by even the people inside of it who you may agree with kind of threaten your own sovereignty.
Yeah. The world has changed, man. And it's going into a direction that doesn't look good. You know, I think that dark times are ahead of us, and, you know, hopefully the American people can kind of pull together and kind of, you know, turn the ship around. But, you know, we're up against really big enemies like the deep state, you know, corporations. There's so much against us. And you were saying you think that if Biden wins, the Democrats will be tired of this middle of the road thing and they'll put a progressive in. I'm not so sure, man. I think if Biden wins, that'll confirm to them that, hey, what we're doing is working and we can keep doing it. I think right now we got to like put pressure onto the Democratic Party and say, hey, Biden's got to go. But then again, if we do that, who are they going to put in there? You know, I hear some rumbles of that guy from California. I can't think of his name.
Oh, governor. Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, which he sounds horrendous. And then I don't want Kamala Harris to be president. And then they're saying like Michelle Obama. But the thing is, Michelle Obama, she's okay. But I mean, she's not a politician, you know? And that just goes back to the identity politics that they use. They say, oh, hey, here's a Black woman. Vote for her because she's Black and a woman and you want to get the virtue signal points. Mm. But it's like, well, what does she stand for? What is she going to do? You know? And then let's say they do put like Kamala or Michelle Obama in office and people vote for him just because they're a Black woman. Then that turns off the other people who don't care about virtue signaling. They want actual change, things done. So it's like a vicious cycle that I'm not sure how to get out of. But that being said, man, this has been a great talk. I really learned a lot, and I hope my audience does too. So, you know, we've been talking for about 2 hours. Time has really flown. So I just want to ask, man, what's the final word? And then also just let people know where they can find you online.
Yeah, final word is with anything political online is like the truth always lies somewhere in the middle, or it's very distorted, especially in this day and age. And I know no one likes the whole "do your own research." I know that even that term got weaponized by pro-vaccine people, anti-vaccine people. That's a different discussion for a different day. But what I would argue is, like, from my perspective is what I presented on the show. I think the other perspective would be the book that I suggested for Isaac before we did this interview, which is "It Came from Something Awful," which is an interesting book. Gets a lot of things wrong. It does get some things right about that, but I would encourage everybody when you start looking into political matters, or even if you are a true believer, if you are full BLM, or you are full, I'm trying to think, oh, I'm a libertarian, but I'm full gun rights. Like, even if something that you truly, truly believe in, it's always worth going and looking at the opposition, or going and looking at what other people say, to kind of get a better perspective on what your own beliefs are. If your beliefs are, I believe in no gun control. I believe in, shall make no law. Like, if I'm a true gun supporter, it should not hurt me to go look at all the literature and all the discussion that's going on with people who'd want to restrict guns. Like, if anything, I'd want to kind of know what they're thinking. I'd want to know their arguments. I'd want to be open to the idea of that, like, yeah, okay, well, these things are terrible. These things kind of make sense. So I would just think, like, I think that's the antidote to a lot of the situations that we're in. Even if we're a true believer in one particular topic or subject, it never hurts to go find out what the other perspective is, find out what the other side is saying, if not just to for your own edification, to know how you're going to make that argument, but maybe to see, can I find any common ground? There's got to be. Even if you believe in something 100%, you can find some common ground. What would be the things that you would compromise, or you if you had to bring people together? I think it's just kind of an interesting way to think. And I encourage everybody to do that when they look into politics. Just look at both sides and use your own BS detector to kind of figure out what this doesn't sound right. This sounds right. These people have a point here, and kind of come to your own conclusions, and always be open to new information, because new information is always coming in. There's no other point in life where politics seems to be the only thing in the world where people are like, no, I don't need to hear anything new. I don't need to hear any new evidence. I'm already sold. I hate to make another analogy, but it's to me, it's like religion. Like, if your relationship with religion is like, I go in, they tell me what to do, and I just do it, then you're not really getting the full juice out of it. You have to be wrestling with it. You have to really be trying to figure out what it means to you at different points in your life. Like, it has to be an active conversation. You don't worship God, but you should be wrestling with the concepts of God, getting down in the mud and really trying to figure out what this means for me, why this would fit here, how this would apply to other people. If you're not doing that with your political beliefs, if you're not doing that with every one of your beliefs, you're not getting the most out of it. You're not really challenging yourself, and you should be. That I think that's where critical thought and objective thinking comes from, is when in the self, everyone else in the, the whole rest of the world can be going crazy, but as an individual, you do have the sovereignty of your own mind to take your belief and challenge it, decide whether or not it stands up to the test.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree with that, man. We need more people connecting with each other and learning what people think and actually formulating their own opinions, not just listening to CNN or Fox and just parroting what they say. So yeah, that's a great way to end it, man. If you could just tell people where they could find you again, your name of your show, and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't like it's not political at all. Now, my current show is called The Evil Mark Show. It's more of a sports talk, way more lighthearted. All comedy, all sports talk. But the same things that we had in this discussion, I apply on my show for the world of sports. Like, try not to listen to a lot of talking heads. Try to just focus on the fun. Try to come up with our own ideas and opinions on what's happening in the world of sports. Every Thursday we do a college football show during the season. Rest of the year it's all sports, and then Friday during the NFL season we do an NFL show. The rest of the year during the off season we do just general pop culture stuff. So if you're looking for sports talk, you're looking for pop culture talk, we do have some in-depth discussions, but not quite like this one. So I thank you so much, Isaac, for having me on. I don't often get to talk about politics, and I love to do it. But yeah, Evil Mark Show, wherever podcasts are available. And then also, if you do not want any politics, you don't want any sports talk, you're just looking for strictly jokes and silliness, then you can find me on TikTok and Instagram at Ask Evil Mark. You can send me your questions. I will provide you a terrible, terrible, funny, or stupid answer. That'll be available for you. And we can yuck it up until the Russian nukes get here.
Sounds great, man. Thanks a lot. Thank you. A great day, man. Take it easy.
I appreciate you.
All right. That's a wrap. Thank you for joining us for another enlightening conversation here on Bright Brains. I hope you've gained valuable insights and inspiration to fuel your own bright ideas. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe, rate, and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform or however else you listen to this podcast. Also, we can be found on all major social media. Just type in Bright Brains with a Z. And remember, the brightest minds are those that never stop seeking knowledge.